We are continuing in our series this morning, Total Request Sermon. This is something that kind of we began laying the groundwork for about a month ago. And you guys have submitted some good questions, some interesting things for us to think about. And so I will just kind of let you know that we may not get to everything that you asked in specificity. It's a hard word to say. We may not get to everything that you asked, but I will say this. This is probably not the last time we're going to do this. You guys asked some really good questions, some theological things, some things about culture and what's going on in the world that we live in. So if we don't get to what you're looking for, or you think of something, maybe like it's the last week of the series, and you're like, oh, I should have, you know, let me know that. And because this will probably be something that we revisit, this theme and the way we've kind of and brought some of these things to the forefront. Last week, if you weren't with us, last week centered on our ability to witness to those that are not all that interested in Jesus. And this, we kind of said this is everything from family members who are maybe not all that interested in who Jesus is, co-workers, neighbors, in-laws, outlaws, everybody, because there's always this question of how do I communicate Jesus to those that aren't all that interested? I understand I have a responsibility. I even want to. There is this desire that I have to communicate Jesus, but it's hard when they're not all that interested. And what we said last week is that our ability to witness and share is tied to our boldness with Christ. You know, last week we talked about and we referenced and connected our stories to the story of Peter and John in Acts chapter 4 and 5 when they heal the crippled beggar, and then they're called into some sort of accountability before kind of the local law holders of the church, and how they had this undeniable boldness before men who these are the same kind of people that had already killed Jesus. And so the boldness before these men who were kind of holding their lives in the balance, that is a unique kind of situation. And we want to categorize that, well, those are biblical figures. One of the convicting statements that's made I think it's at the end of chapter 4, when they decide to let Peter and John go, they said these are ordinary, unschooled men. So they did not have rabbi training. They were probably more like us than we would maybe even acknowledge or give them credit for. So there is a boldness that needs to rise up inside of us. Last week we also talked about the healing aspect of that story. And if you were here last week, I hope that was a significant moment for you. It was for me. It was a very powerful experience to see so many of you come forward and say, I want to be healed. There are some physical things. There are some emotional things. There are some family issues. And I want to be healed of those things. And so we prayed and anointed for like 20 or 25 of the people that were here last week. That was roughly half of the number of people we had here that morning. That is a terrific, fantastic experience to be a part of. And I hope that if you were here and maybe you were anointed and prayed for, that you will stand on that moment and say, God is doing something. And I may not see all of the pieces of the picture laid out before me, but I am confident that God is going to do something. That kind of leads us to what we're going to talk about today. There was a whole group of questions. In fact, I want to read these questions for you. Some of these come from kids, and you'll understand that in as I read these questions, because they are the big questions about God. Who is God? Where did he come from? Who created God? How did God come to be? How can God be three in one? And why did God create the universe? Now, if you wrote down one of those, I don't want to shame you in writing for you wrote down a question that I maybe attributed to a kid. That's not what I'm after at all. These are good questions. I think really good questions, because they address the enormity, the massive nature of God. And the truth is, as I looked at these questions, I thought, you know what? I don't know that we can, much less on a Sunday with all of these questions, but much less even with just one, get to the bottom of those questions. Because those are massive questions, even bigger than we might even consider just hearing those questions read. And it started to, there's this little thought that started to occur in me. You know what? This is some of the mystery of who God is. And some of these questions, we could spend our whole life trying to answer some of those questions and never completely land there. Never get the questions answered. And that is a difficult thing for us in our world because our culture, 21st century, where we live, we are addicted to answers. In particular, answers that are quickly given and easily understood. We love simple, lowest common denominator answers. And I looked at those questions and I'm like, man, I don't even know. Some of that stuff, I don't even exactly know where to kind of research. Why did God create the universe? The Bible doesn't really give an answer why God created the universe outside of his desire to create. So then there was another thought that started to kind of stir in me. How comfortable are we with mystery, with the unknown? As much as we love to have answers and easily definable answers and easily given answers, how comfortable are we in our faith in God with the mystery, the unknown? I think, by and large, this may be a significant struggle. It is for me at times, not knowing what is next, what is coming down the road, the next step that we need to take. That is hard for me to land a comfortable spot in the midst of that. Anybody else wrestle with that? Yeah. Some of us are knee-deep in that this morning, right? So I'm just going to tell you up front, I'm not going to try and answer those questions specifically. What we're going to do instead is we're going to take a look at a story in Judges chapter 6. So you can, if you have your Bibles, you might want to turn to that spot. This issue of mystery is something that I really could not get away from this week, especially with this idea, and I already said this, our world is built on answers and having answers and experiencing a sense of, oh, okay, got that landed, we got that answered. The other side of that question of having answers is the issue of faith. Now, here's the thing. I think that God gives us and points us in the direction of answers that will help us in our faith. And the places that we do not need answers, God kind of just lets hang out there. When we start talking about faith, there's this idea that starts to come to the surface of, well, blind faith. How does that show itself? How does that work itself out? Blind faith, of course, is the notion that we can simply say in an out loud voice, I believe that God has things in control. I do not need the answers. I am just going to walk towards God, and that's going to settle everything for me. I think there are times that God asks us to exhibit and exercise a blind faith, that God simply says, you don't get to know right now. You need to come with me. In Scripture, we see this kind of blind faith exercise. Moses is called to lead the people out of slavery. It's Abraham. Abraham is called to lead this new nation, but he is supposed to pack up his stuff, load the U-Haul, and start driving, and God says, I'll tell you when to stop. That would be an example of a blind faith, that God has not given Abraham all that much information. He has simply said, go this way, and keep going until I tell you to stop. But what we see more often than not throughout Scripture is what we're going to call this morning an informed faith. A faith that rests on and draws from the past and the things that God has done before we stand in this place. An informed faith that says, I may not know everything I want to know right now in this spot, in this place that God is asking me to go, or this thing that God is asking me to do, but I can look backwards and say, God has done some things. He has provided for people in similar situations as this. So, in Judges chapter 6, a little bit of background before we read here, the Midianites are a neighboring nation. They are a violent, hasty people, and they have kind of laid siege to Israel, and they have dominated the land, and we're going to read about some of the destruction that Midian kind of brought down on Israel. And so they are in the midst of this very difficult, violent, lonely time. They feel very separated from God. So let's begin reading this story in Judges chapter 6. We're going to start right at verse 1. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and for 7 years he gave them into the hands of the Midianites. Now, before we go any further, this is a pattern that we see again and again and again and again, right? God says, I have a path for you. This is the path that I want you to follow. And Israel says, I don't really like that path. I think we'll go this way. And every time that they choose to stray from what God has in mind and do their own thing, God allows things like this to happen again and again. And there it's almost as if they willfully are ignorant of their own history. That they refuse to acknowledge God had something in mind for us, and our forefathers or our great-grandfathers and grandmothers chose not to, and we still don't learn from that. So let's continue to read. Verse 2. Because the power of Midian was so oppressive, the Israelites prepared shelters for themselves in mountain clefts, caves, and strongholds. Whenever the Israelites planted their crops, the Midianites, Amalekites, and other eastern peoples invaded the country. They camped on the land and ruined the crops all the way to Gaza and did not spare a living thing for Israel, neither sheep nor cattle nor donkeys. So we're starting to get the picture here, right? This is a devastating time in Israel's history because they have chosen to step away from the plan that God had for them. And we can find other in other places we can read about kind of exactly what they did to step away from God. This story is dominantly about one character, Gideon. And as Gideon is in the midst of living this life of fear and being overrun by a foreign nation, God does something significant. But this scene that is playing out in front of us, I cannot imagine living in such a time. I cannot even believe, I don't know how I would handle that. I don't know what I would do. This seems like desperate times. Every time that they would plant and their crops would start to grow, Midian would come through seemingly at just the right time to completely devastate the land, pitch their tents and allow their men to walk through the fields and kill any living thing that was around. An unbelievable time frame. Verse 5, they came up with their livestock and their tents like swarms of locusts. It was impossible to count the men and their camels. They invaded the land and ravaged it. Midian also impoverished the Israelites, and they cried out to the Lord for help. I think this is again, we see this pattern again and again. God says, here's a path. Israel says, we don't like that path. We're going to do our own thing. And they get down the road that leads to death and destruction and loss. And then when they are at the bottom of the barrel, that is when they start crying out to God. And God does not ignore them. At any point in all of the history of Israel, in particular the Old Testament, we do not see God turning a deaf ear. Now, God may not answer in exactly the time frame that they desire, but God never just turns away. Look at verse 7. When the Israelites cried out to the Lord because of Midian, he sent them a prophet who said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. I brought you up out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery." So this is interesting. This is, again, a pattern that we see in how God deals with, speaks to, and relates to the people that are calling out to him. He reminds them of the past. There's probably a sense of a loss of faith that the Israelites have had in God. They've done their own thing. They started to cry out to him, and God has not answered in the time frame that they wanted. Isn't this just like us? That something goes bad, something goes wrong, and we start crying out for someone to fix it, and by golly, them fixing it better happen right now. Don't we do this? This happens with kids. The thing is, though, I think we grow up and become adults like this, too. Maybe not as often as our children, but this certainly happens. Israel has cried out to God, and God, before he answers, and before he delivers them out, he simply reminds them of the past. He says, hey, have you forgotten your history? Have you forgotten everything that has led you to this place? How is it that your families got out of slavery in Egypt? God says, that was me. How is it that they crossed the Red Sea and survived the desert and landed in the Promised Land where you now live? That was me, says God. He reminds them of something that has happened in their recent history. And I think this is where this idea of an informed faith kind of grows and the picture becomes a little more clear. Now, it's really easy to read this and be reminded that that God has done some great things in the past. And we can look at the way that Israel responds, in particular Gideon, and we're going to get to him in just a minute. But it's really easy to look at these stories and say, well, that's great that God did something spectacular for them, but I'm looking at my life and I'm not really sure that God has done anything all that spectacular or tremendous in my life. Really easy to feel that way, especially if you're at the bottom of the barrel. If you feel like everything has kind of conspired against you, we got to go into this self-loathing mode, don't we? I mean, it happens to all of us. There's no question. So in the idea that maybe God hasn't done anything all that spectacular for me, let's be reminded. We could talk about the country that you and I live in, the freedom that we have to just gather in this place. Now, I think there's a lot that's wrong with our country and the direction that we're headed. I almost feel like this is, well, I don't almost, I do feel like we are reenacting some of Israel's past mistakes. That we continue to kind of slowly turn away from God and elevate ourselves and look at what we've done and look at how powerful and rich and important we are. This idea of an informed faith, we could talk about how we could talk about your health. Maybe you have lived a life where you've had a decent, fair amount of health that you've experienced. Or we could talk about the family that God has placed around you and how that has grown and shaped your life. We could talk about your ability, if you've had the ability to work and make something with your hands or provide for your family. We could talk about all those things. And if we still get to the end of all of those conversations and there's still this sense of, I don't really know that God has done anything spectacular for me, then we could simply refer to this book. The simple fact that we have this book in its entirety in our hands and we can freely read the stories that are here and we can allow those stories to inform our faith today. There are places in the world that have only a single page of this book. And they cherish it because it is contraband. This book is illegal in many countries throughout the world. And little churches gathering in basements and in secret rooms and in houses that are hidden away cherish the one page that they have. And just like the song that we sang earlier, this is their cornerstone, that the truth of what God has done in the past. And that is what informs their faith because they look around and it doesn't seem like God is active anywhere. It seems like God is very absent. The simple fact that we can have multiple copies of this book. I mean, I have more than one Bible. Anybody else? And maybe we have to kind of dust it off before we open it up. The simple fact that we have that means that God has done something spectacular for us to bring us to this place, this day. Within this book are the stories of what God has done that help inform our faith today. That we can lean into those stories and be aware of the things that God has been active in, the different people that seem different than us but actually have a whole lot in common with us. So let's continue to read. Go to verse 10. I said to you, this is the Lord still speaking, the angel of the Lord, I am the Lord your God. Do not worship the gods of the Amorites in whose land you live, but you have not listened to me. Ever had this conversation with God before? To quote my wife, this is God maybe using a little bit of Southern. I done told you and told you. Don't go this way. I have something better for you over here. Don't go this way. And we often choose that way. I remember when my son, I'm trying to think how old he was. He's probably 2. And he had gone down into the basement with Jenny to just help with laundry. Right? You know how 2-year-olds help with laundry. Not a lot, but it's kind of fun. So he's down there, and the water heater is in the same room. It's on the other end. And he kind of wanders and toddles over by it, and he kind of squats. You know how kids will squat. And he'll look down. He's like almost laying on the floor, but he's still on his feet. And there's the pilot light that heats the water is there. And he said he made some reference to the light, and Jenny said, don't touch. Hot. Don't touch. So she kind of, and he's still standing over there, and he's not touching it, but he's still looking at it. She kind of goes on about her business, and the next thing that she hears is him kind of scream out in pain, and he's crying, and he's holding up a finger that is a little bit toasted because he stuck his finger in exactly where Mama told him not to stick his finger. The very next time that they are in the basement, Ethan stands at a distance from the water heater, points at it, and says, hot. He has already learned, Mama told me not to, I did it, and there were consequences. And now he didn't even want to go near the hot water heater. Why is it that we are so slow to learn from the similar kind of experiences? And we just kind of, there is a little bit of hubris that rises up in us and says, okay, it went bad last time, but that was last time. I can handle this now. I have learned enough from my mistakes, but not so much that I will stop doing it. And really, this is what God has saying. He said, I done told you and told you, do not worship the other gods, and yet you have done it. But there's not just bad news. God also then turns the corner with them. Verse 11, the angel of the Lord came and sat down underneath the oak in Ophrah, not that Ophrah, that belonged to Joash, the Abiezrite, where his son Gideon was threshing wheat in the winepress to keep it from the Midianites. Now, let's just pause here because this is an important picture for us to get a hold of. Because probably no winemakers in this place, and we're not even sure what a winepress exactly looks like. In this situation, the winepress, specifically to Gideon's setting, was dug into the ground. And he is hiding from the Midianites, who at any minute could come down, sweep through, kill him, take his wheat from him. A sustainable product that he needed for his family. But so when you thresh wheat, especially in this particular instance, after the wheat has been harvested and it's dried out, what you would do is take like a shovel type thing, throw the wheat up in the air, the wind would blow through it and blow away the waste, and the wheat being a little bit heavier would fall to the ground. He's in a hole trying to thresh the wheat. This is not working very well because there's no wind that's able to come through. He basically is working out of frustration and fear. And then this angel of the Lord shows up. When the angel of the Lord, verse 12, appeared to Gideon, he said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." This is kind of a ridiculous statement, isn't it? Mighty warrior? Threshing wheat in a wine press, though it's not working very well. I'm hiding from anybody who might come along and seek to steal what I have. Mighty warrior. And then I just love the way that he responds. Now, I have an older NIV. It says, "But sir," there's a new NIV that says, "Pardon me." You ever had that conversation where someone, you say something and it's kind of like the response is, "Well, pardon me. This is what you're saying is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard," right? So he responds, "Pardon me," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us, why has all of this happened to us? Where are all his wonders that our fathers told us about when they said, 'Did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us and put us into the hand of Midian." Man, that is quite a statement to kind of push back against this angel of the Lord, who is the Lord's representative. He is speaking for God. He has a direct line back to God. Hey, aren't you paying attention? Have you not noticed the landscape around here? Everything is a mess. Every time we plant and it grows, those rotten Midianites, they come through, they camp in our fields, they destroy everything that is around. Any donkey or cattle that's left around, they completely kill and take for themselves. Are you not paying attention to what's going on? Ever had one of those conversations with God? When God feels very distant, and we just kind of rail our fist at the heaven and say, "God, why? You've promised me something, and yet I don't see any activity from you. You've told me some things, and yet everything seems to be in chaos and uprooted. Why? You're not paying attention." Gideon is reminded of his past, a reminder that he is not alone. As I shared with you during prayer about what's been going on with my dad and how well the surgery went and the recovery process is well underway, If you back up, and this is probably not even something I don't know how much I had even shared with you about kind of what was going on with my parents and the ministry that they're involved in, the church in Oklahoma. A couple months ago, as my dad's health, we knew that my dad's health was not great. He had been very limited in some of his activities. We went on vacation with them last year down to Alabama, and Dad just was not able to do much. And it was a realization then that something had to be done. There, something in his heart was not quite right. And if you remember last fall, I was able to go down there through the generosity of a lot of you people, helped me go down and be with my mom while he went in for surgery. And it was thought that just a couple of weeks ago they were going to finish up that surgery, add a couple more stents, and of course none of that stuff ended up working out and they went into open heart surgery. Before that was all scheduled, and before that all happened, my dad had this, well, both my mom and dad were wondering, okay, well, how long do we continue to do this? Maybe we get the other side of the surgery and we talk about retirement and just kind of we're done. Maybe health doesn't allow us to continue. God's doing some really amazing things in the church that they're serving, but maybe this is the end of our chapter with this church. Not long after that conversation, before we got to last week, couple weeks before. My dad was reading something out of Psalms, and I can't remember where this was, but the gist of it was this: the Lord protects your heart and brings you to a future that he has promised you. After my dad read that, my mom just happened to walk in the room, and she said, and he said to her, "Debbie, you got to hear this. I feel like God is telling us that all of the things that we have been a part of and all the things that we are started, that God is going to give us a few more years to see some of these things to completion." So with that in mind, before we even get to the delayed surgery and all of those things, my dad has a tremendous amount of confidence that God is going to, not only is he going to bring him back to full health, but they're going to be able to continue to do ministry in that setting for a few more years to complete some of the things that God has started. Now again, it's really easy to point to that and say, well, why doesn't God talk to me like that? Why doesn't God give me some assurance about the future? I don't know exactly. But I do know this. That kind of communion and communication with God does not happen overnight. That is something that is born out of years on his knees, praying to God, saying, "God, use me. Do not let my life be just an empty chamber. May you use me to do something significant." Decades praying that God would provide and make sure that things happen, that God would provide a vision for what God has in mind for the churches that he has served over the course of his career. See, this is some of the mystery, because I know that my dad has also experienced those times when he felt very alone, very separated from God, that God was not giving him answers that he felt like he needed. But his faith was informed not just by the circumstances of today, not just by the moments that he personally experienced. His faith is informed by stories like Gideon, because Gideon is standing in the wine press, sure that he is about to die. I cannot imagine the fear that overwhelmed Gideon when the angel appeared. He is hiding. He is just certain someone is going to come down, kill him, kill his family, and take whatever provision that he has. And the angel of the Lord shows up and says, "I have news for you. I want to call you into something greater, something larger, something that God has in mind for you." Let's continue to read this story. "Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Verse 13, "But sir," Gideon replied, "if the Lord is with us, why has all of this happened?" Go to verse 14. "The Lord turned to him and said, 'Go in the strength that you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you?' Verse 15, "But Lord," Gideon asked, "how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in all of my family." Verse 16, "The Lord answered, 'I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites together.'" If we read through the rest of the story about Gideon and his leadership and the things that God did through him, we would find a very interesting collection of stories. There are a huge number of Israelites that have gathered. And God says, "I want you to eliminate some." And God did this two or three different times. Take the fighting men here, do these things. And they began to separate into a couple different groups. God says, "Keep the smaller group, let the rest of the men go." God takes them, has them go down to the water, and has the men who drink like dogs with their faces down in the water, let all of them go. The men who kind of scoop up and drink the water from their hand, keep them. They end up with about 300 men. And then, see, in the midst of the mystery, Gideon's faith continues to grow. There is a dream that one of the warriors have. It's kind of this one of these weird dreams that you don't think mean anything, and yet it means something. One of these, the warriors has a dream that a barley loaf comes down and crushes, kind of rolls into the Midianite camp and crushes them. And Gideon looks at that and says, "That is a sign from God. That's not just a weird dream. That's not just because you ate tacos the night before. God is doing something in that. There is something to that dream." And sure enough, Gideon kind of rallies the men, and the defeat of the Midianites is sound. They are completely routed. This massive, hasty, violent nation is completely beaten. by 300 men who trusted in one man who said, God is going to do something in the midst of the mystery. I mean, this plan doesn't make any sense. When you eliminate a certain number of men, when you take it down to just 300 warriors taking on this very powerful, violent nation, Midian, there is a sense that God desires us to trust him in the midst of the unknown, in the midst of the mystery. See, the real question today is this. Are you and I willing to place an informed faith in the hands of God? Now, I don't think that God is asking us to go on blind faith alone. I think there are times that God says, you're just going to have to trust me. You're going to have to step into this thing. I think more often than not, God asks us to exercise an informed faith. That we simply are willing to place our trust in God in the midst of the mystery. Or are you going to hold God to a position of saying to him, all right, God, if you give me these answers, then I will trust you. Then I will follow you. See, I think there is a tension that exists in our relationship with God. God will reveal to us and show us certain things, and there are certain things that God simply says, this is an exercise of your faith. And we stand in the middle of that tension of the known and the unknown. And God is simply saying, are you willing to let go of your desire to have answers in order to fully trust me? To let go of the things that you think you can control, the things that you think you can hold on to, and believe that God has them in his hands. Are you willing to believe that God has greatness in mind for you? This is the other part of this story. If you remember Gideon's objection, I'm the least in my tribe, in the smallest of tribes, the most insignificant of tribes, and I am the least, the weakest, the most insignificant in that smallest of tribes. Why would you ask me? I think you've gotten the wrong guy. And God simply says, I am choosing you, and I am limiting the number of people, the number of fighting men, the number of warriors, so that there can be no mistake that you did not do this on your own. It was because of what God does. I think that God is calling us to exhibit a similar kind of faith that says, I may not know everything and understand everything that's going on right here in this place, in the midst of the unknown, the battle, the struggle, the mystery. It is in those places that God raises up unlikely heroes, ones who are willing to have their faith exercised. Maybe it's time for us to be still, to allow God some space to speak to us, to lay down our desire, our continual striving for answers. I think that God gives us the answers that we need in a time frame in which we need them. And in the time between the answers and what is now known and understand, this is a place where our faith gets exercised. It becomes informed by the things that God has done in our own past and in the past of people like Gideon. Because God simply said, trust me in the midst of the unknown, the mystery, and great things will happen. There's a video that may help kind of settle our spirits. Abby, go ahead and run that.
Father, we ask this morning that you would help us be still. That you would help us recognize that you have great things in mind for us and that you are calling us. Call us by name. Thank you, Father, for speaking to us in this moment. May we not miss you as you are speaking to us. May we find new ways to continue to trust you. May we become a little more comfortable with the mystery.